Okay, so let's, so that we at least touch the not the beginning of the parsha. So after Yehuda successfully convinces Yosef to have mercy on Binyamin, Yosef reveals himself, blah, 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 blah. He invites his family down. Yaakov doesn't want to. He's scared. Hashem reassures him and he tells him, go down, it'll be okay, I'll be with you. And then we begin the saga of the Jews in Mitzrayim. Right, that's the... Okay. That's the so that's sort of a good part of the narrative. And then at the end of the parasha, so we the lens turns away from his family back to the Egyptians during the intensifying famine. Right? Now the lens turns back to the Egyptians. Right. Now, if you look there, right, it's interesting what happens there. Right. So what happens? He says, okay, v'lechem ein b'chol ha'aretz ki chaved arav ma'od v'teila eretz Mitzrayim v'eretz Kanan v'pnei arav. Right. So there's no bread left. Mitzrayim, Kanan. V'elakei Yosef kolam kesef v'nimtza v'eretz Mitzrayim v'eretz Kanan b'shev v'ashem v'mshavrim v'yavei Yosef et kesef beit ha'paro. And Yosef collects all the money in Mitzrayim and all the money in Canaan, and he brings it to the house of Paro. And then Pasuk Tezvav, you get something strange. And all the money is finished from Mitzrayim and from Canaan, and Mitzrayim came to Yosef and said, give us bread. Right, so right, that little thing already indicates something's odd. Now, it could just be that this is very unlikely. Midrash Seichel Tov takes this direction. He says, yeah, whatever, right, lav dafka. Mitzrayim means Mitzrayim and Canaan. Right? Like, how many times can we say Mitzrayim, Canaan, Mitzrayim, Canaan, Mitzrayim, Canaan? At some point, we just give up and we just say Mitzrayim. Which is a bit strange, a bit stretching it, if you ask me. Now, some of the Mepharshim say, well, the Netziv says, look, Canaan may have run out of grain, but, you know, they really did have food. They had animals. And whatever, when, like, they ran out of money, so originally they didn't want to kill all their animals. They'd rather buy produce from Mitzrayim. But when they ran out, okay, fine. So they stopped. So they started killing their animals for food. And Mitzrayim was left to negotiate with Yosef. Okay. If you look at the Ramban says, "V'izkir ki tama kesef meretz Kanaan, bavur ki Mitzrayim bevoam al Yosef yaskir lozeh." But the Ramban is a bit cynical here, and he says, "What do? They come to Yosef and they say, look, you don't really have a choice at this point. Give us the food, but what are you going to do with it?" Right? There's no money left around in the region. Everyone else is poor. Right? Everyone else is impoverished. So you might as well make this deal with us and give us food in return for our freedom, because, you know, what do you think? You're gonna hold off and you're gonna hold out for a better buyer? There are no more buyers. Right?
Freedom?
Right, well, that's what they're about to do. Right? We haven't done their negotiating strategy yet. Right? But right. But the Ramban says that, look, they come to Yosef and they say, look, nobody has money. Right? Whatever deal we're going to offer you is the only anything you're getting out of this. Right? The money is just gone. We're done.
I get really good. Oh my God, Evie.
And then they get into their negotiating. They say, look, let's trade for the animals. And then once it's the animals, the land. And eventually it's their freedom. Right? And then Yosef moves them around. But it strikes me that that while all of these may be true, the simple pshat of this pasuk, right, is to emphasize something that probably didn't become clear until these pasukim. Right, because if you read from Miketz, right, and you wanted to summarize the financial situation of that region, what would you have said?
Fine.
So you would have said
everywhere else is bad.
Right, that's what you would have said, right? Egypt is fine, everyone else is bad. by the time you get to Vayigash, you find out that's not true. That was a mischaracterization. Right? What really happened?
Everywhere is terrible except Yosef.
Yeah, exactly. Right? It's not Egypt which is doing well. It's the royal coffers which are doing well. And I think that's really what this pasuk is doing. Right? It's saying, "Vayitoma kezer meretz Kanaan, meretz Mitzrayim, meretz Kanaan, vayavochol Mitzrayim el Yosef." Meaning, you thought it was Mitzrayim versus everybody else, but it's not. Right? It's the royal treasuries, right? The royal coffers represented by Yosef versus everybody. Right? It's not Mitzrayim versus everybody. Right? Now, that sets up, I think, the end of the parsha in two ways. One is that, and this is a point Nachum Halevovich points out, right? Is that you have all of this, right? All this pressure, right? Meaning nobody is free, right? This isn't Mitzrayim versus the world. It's Beit Paro versus everybody. And then, magically, what do you get at the end of the parsha? What do you get? You get one exception, except for the priests. Right? The priests, they get money from Paro. Right? So Nachum Halevovich points out, right, this all sets up. She doesn't make all these diukim that I just did, but she points out just generically, but I think when you read this carefully, you realize what's going on, is that it's setting you up to say, look at the religious leadership culture of Mitzrayim. Right? People weren't in it for religion. Right? They were political cronies. Right? They were court priests. Right? They represented the king. That's why even when it's the world against, right, when it's the world against Beit Paro, and the priests are part of Beit Paro. Now she points out that why is that important? Right? Why is that important theologically?
Presumably our priests are not like that.
Because they're not. Because what's the difference? What do our priests get? Because they get no nachla, ki Hashemu nachlatam. They have to give up their nachala. Right? They have to give up their nachala to become the Kohanim. Right? Which is a very striking contrast. Right? When you realize that it's Beit Baro against the world, except for the priests, because the priests, right, people went into the priesthood, so they would be the exception to everything. The richest of the rich. Right? That only makes it that much more striking when you say that, you know, Jewish Levium and Kohanim get nothing, right? Meaning, sure, they get Truma. That's because they don't have land, right? They have to give up their land. Right? Yeah, exactly. Right here, they're the only ones who keep their land. Okay, that's point one. Point two, it also contrasts the Jewish concept, not just of priesthood, but of, I think, kingship. And of kingship. Because in a Jewish king, right, a Jewish king of a Jewish nation, what are the laws about him? What can he not have? And money, right? Meaning he can't be collecting too much money, right? This notion that a king's goal, right, Yosef here represents the Egyptian royalty, right, really Beit Paro, the fact that he would be out there not for the people but for himself, right, is antithetical. A king can't have too much money. He only can have as much money as he needs. He can't just collect money infinitely. And you look through Tanakh, and what do you see? You see that Jewish kings, even evil Jewish kings, are what? Where are they always? They're always amongst their people. Right? They may be worshipping Avodah Zarah, but when there's a famine, right, you think about the story of the Arba Mitzrayim. Right? The evil king is walking around, and the woman who is complaining to him that she has no food and etc. Right, and he says, "Bring me Elisha so I can kill him because he's not davening enough, or he's not doing enough to make us have food." Right, the fact that righteous kings are doing it is not a chiddush. My point is that even the evil kings who are over the Avodah Zarah wants to kill Elisha. Right, he wants to kill Elisha because he wants to help his people. Right, I mean that ethos is so part of the Jewish kingship. That, which is again, is antithetical to the way Paro's house is presented here. Now, the third thing, and this is more controversial. The first two are very nice. The third one is going to be a bit controversial. Is that I sort of Eli did that, and I said, yeah, Paro, great. Yosef represents Paro. The problem is, right, it's really Yosef, right? It's really Yosef, because it contrasts yet a third part at the end of the parasha, which is, right, there's one other group of people who don't get messed over royally, and that is?
Goshen.
Yeah, that's the Jews, right? By Yosef, Yosef, et aviv, et achav, vayitin lehem achuzah, be'eretz Mitzrayim, be'metav ha'aretz, be'eretz Ramses, kasher tziva paro, vayichalkel Yosef, et aviv, et achav, et kol beit aviv, lechem lefiatav, lechem ein b'chol ha'aretz, ki chavein ha'rav ma'od, v'teil eretz Mitzrayim, v'eretz kanam b'nei ha'rav, right? Right, that's the context here. And later on, you find out that they are, right, vayachazuba, right, they are, they're the only ones who cling to their land.
Yeah.
Now, Chazal, right, Rashi quotes, it suggests this is on purpose, right, that Yosef orients this whole situation to make it that the Mitzrim are exiled so that they don't make fun of the new immigrants. Right? But just like there's going to be a bit of a grudge against the priests, and this is something that Rai Clapper points out, right, is that if you just follow the parsha at the end here, and you wonder why in two parshiot there's a tremendous amount of animosity, right? You want to look for a political explanation for how the Jews become the scapegoats, right? The end of parshiot Vayigash gives you one, right? Which is that everybody else is losing their lands, everybody else is being taken advantage of by royalty, right? And like it or not, the face of this is Yosef. And the only people who are the exceptions are his family, right? Are the priests and his family, right? And if you've got a bunch of immigrants who have someone who's politically powerful, who's in charge of all the money, and is messing you over, forcing you to leave your house, but his family, who did nothing except they were related to the viceroy, comes in, right? There's going to be animosity. Now, you could take that in two directions. You could take that as that's just the description, right? There was nothing wrong here. It's just the reality, right? That political animosity comes from this, right? You don't have to blame Yosef to realize that the political reality that was created around him. Alternatively, right, you can blame Yosef, right? And you can claim that Yosef is not fully innocent in this, right? The fact that he's partaking in this situation in this way, right? Right, and Rai Clapper notes that if you look through Chazal or the Rishonim, you'll find the Chazal and the Rishonim are constantly looking for what sins did the Avot do that led to the slavery in Mitzrayim, right? And he notes that, right, at least one of them or one part of it may be, right, definitely at a political level, the fact that Yosef was involved in this whole process that disenfranchised the entirety of Egyptian society with the exception of his family. Right, and that is the image that is being created. Right, that I'll leave to you to think about whether you're comfortable with those implications. Right, but it's clear. Right, you can't. It's hard to deny that that is the political background to what's about to happen. Right, whether Yosef bears culpability or this is what he was supposed to do. Right, and this is part of God's plan. Right, it's not Yosef's fault. God orients. Right, I mean, God is allowed to through his hashgacha lead to his his nevuot b'derech hateva. Right, so he made it that it would be that the Jews would be the scapegoats. Whether you think this is part of God's hashgacha or whether you think Yosef is at fault is less the point. But the fact that clearly the parsha is emphasizing the political background that is going to b'derech hateva lead to Avdut Mitzrayim, I think that is something that's clear from the end of the parsha. Okay.